I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars, big facts, and griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, long I'm singing me warning. You're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fight beside me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They live on milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a foreign dynasty. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a foreign. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You run down my country, man, you walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me, and that's the name of this program. Here on AltRightTV.com or WhiteResistanceRadio.com. You can reach us either way. Well, more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, Ron Paul, who was a long-time, very conservative libertarian congressman in the United States Congress, was a long-time critic of big government. And he, of course, was a medical doctor, and he was quite opposed to abortion. And this is a recent radio commentary he made called the coronavirus is the new terrorism. This is Ron Paul.
After 30 days, I could not believe my before and after picture. I literally rolled back the hands of time 10 years.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the weekly report. Coronavirus is the new terrorism. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has proposed the next multi-billion dollar coronavirus relief spending bill that will support testing, tracing, treatment, isolation, and mask policies that have been part of a national strategic plan she has been advocating. The Trump administration is not opposing Pelosi's plan on principle. Instead, it is haggling over the price. But even if the strategic plan could be implemented at little or no monetary cost, it would still impose an unacceptable cost in lost liberty. Pelosi's plan will lead to either a federal mask mandate or federal funding of state and local mask mandate enforcement. Those who resist wearing masks could likely be reported to the authorities by government-funded mask monitors. We can label this the Stasi approach to health policy after the infamous East German secret police force. Contact tracing could lead to forcing individuals to download a tracing app. The app would record where an individual goes and alert authorities that an individual has been near someone who has tested positive for coronavirus. The strategic plan could eventually include Bill Gates and Anthony Fauci's suggestion that individuals receive digital certificates indicating they are vaccinated for or immune to coronavirus. A certificate would be required before an individual can go to work, to school, or even to the grocery store. The need to demonstrate vaccination for or immunity to coronavirus in order to resume normal life would cause many people to voluntarily receive a potentially dangerous coronavirus vaccine. The Trump administration has already spent billions of dollars to support efforts of companies to develop a coronavirus vaccine. Policymakers have stated that once a vaccine is developed, it will be rushed into production and onto the market. Supporters of expediting production and use of a vaccine should remember the 1976 swine flu vaccine debacle. The swine flu vaccine was rushed into production in response to political pressure to do something. The result was a vaccine that was more of a danger than the flu. Unfortunately, those who raise legitimate concerns regarding the safety of vaccines are smeared as conspiracy theorists. This is the equivalent of stating that anyone who dare criticize our interventionist foreign policy hates freedom and is probably a terrorist sympathizer. The coronavirus panic has given new life to the push for a unique patient identifier. The unique patient identifier was authorized in 1996, but appropriations bills since 1998 have contained a provision forbidding the federal government from developing and implementing the identifier. Unfortunately, 2 weeks ago, the House of Representatives voted to repeal the ban. The unique patient identifier would aid government efforts to track and vaccinate every American, as well as to infringe in other ways on liberty in the name of health. Politicians and bureaucrats cannot eliminate a virus any more than they can eliminate terrorism. What they can do is use terrorism, a virus, and other real exaggerated or manufactured crises to expand their power at the expense of our liberty. Politicians will never resist the temptation to use crises as excuses to gain more power. Therefore, it is up to those of us who know the truth to spread the message of liberty and grow the liberty movement. A strong liberty movement is the only thing that can force the politicians to stop stealing our liberty while promising phantom security from terrorists and viruses. Thanks for listening.
And that was Ron Paul.
Joe Biden's announcement of Kamala Harris as VP, well, it contained a telling tidbit. This is what he said in the written statement. I decided that Kamala Harris is the best person to help me take this fight to Donald Trump and Mike Pence, and then to lead this nation starting in January 2021. Wait, to lead this nation? Wait, wasn't that you supposed to be at the top of the ticket doing all that leading for us, Joe? You know, that whole presidency thing? Come on, man. Even Joe's winning enough to understand that he's not really going to be running the show if he wins in November.
It has to be demonstrated that whomever I pick is two things. One, is capable of me being president because I'm an old guy, okay? No, but I'm serious.
Well, now that we know who will really be taking the reins in a Biden administration, let's take a look at what she'll do if they're elected. Today, the New York Times went the absurd route of touting the senator as a, quote, moderate. Of course, the opposite is the case. For starters, her position on illegal border crossings.
I believe if someone crosses over the border, it's illegally, it is illegal, and you would decriminalize it.
I would not make it a crime punishable by jail.
Of course not. Come on in. Bienvenidos. And what about taxpayer-funded health care for all those new undocumented Democrats?
Raise your hand if your government plan would provide coverage for undocumented immigrants.
Don't you love the hand-raise questions? I love those. What about abortion?
also going to put in place and require that states that have a history of passing legislation that is designed to prevent or limit a woman's access to reproductive health care, that those laws have to come before my Department of Justice for a review.
That's called preclearance. That means partial birth abortion greenlit under President Harris. And she loves socialized medicine.
Do you think eliminating private insurance would be a socialist idea?
No. Okay, so I strongly believe that we need to have Medicare for all.
Do you think that's socialist or not, Medicare for all?
No. No, it's about providing health care to all people.
Yeah, it's worked out well for California. I mean, they're trying out there. And did I mention that Kamala also wants to take your guns away?
Upon being elected, I will give the United States Congress 100 days to get their act together and have the courage to pass reasonable gun safety laws. And if they fail to do it, then I will take executive action.
Yeah, reasonable gun safety. A little Kamala-ology needed there. Here come the guns. The Times also, by the way, called her pragmatic. We say that's fraudulent. Tulsi Gabbard exposed Kamala as a phony on criminal justice.
Now, Senator Harris says she's proud of her record as a prosecutor and that she'll be a prosecutor president. She put over 1,500 people in jail for marijuana violations and then laughed about it when she was asked if she ever smoked marijuana.
And I am proud of making a decision to not just give fancy speeches or be in a legislative body and give speeches on a floor.
The people who suffered under your reign as prosecutor, you owe them an apology.
Tulsi Gabbard just took her apart. Do you remember that debate? Now, furthermore, Senator Harris basically accused Joe Biden of being a racist on national TV.
It was hurtful to hear you talk about the reputations of two United States senators who built their reputations and career on the segregation of race. You also worked with them to oppose busing. And, you know, there was a little girl in California who was part of the second class to integrate her public schools, and she was bused to school every day. And that little girl was me.
That was the it moment. Well, after that, she very publicly suggested that Biden was guilty of sexually assaulting Tara Reid.
Somebody who has a relationship with Vice President Biden, what message would you give to the women who feel like their space has been invaded and passed by her?
I believe them, and I respect them being able to tell their story and having the courage to do it.
Do you believe that the vice president should enter the race?
He's going to have to make that decision for himself.
Marinate in all that for a moment, okay? Essentially racist, at least in promoting all these past senators like Robert Byrd, friendships over. And implicitly, at the very least implicit, she was saying he was guilty of sexual assault, but now all of a sudden she's willing to work with him? A segregationist and a sex criminal? Well, it's a good question. Maybe somebody in the mainstream media will have the courage to ask about this. But given all these issues, I've no doubt that the Biden campaign looked far and wide for a better option than Harris, but I guess there wasn't. Wasn't anyone. Susan Rice had way too much baggage and no election experience. Former Obama advisor David Axelrod said tonight Biden actually clicked best with Governor Whitmer. But she's not a woman of color and runs Michigan like a tin pot dictatorship. And the other candidates were political small fries without any type of experience or name recognition that you'd want in a VP. Of course, Biden's big mistake, of course, was narrowing his options by limiting his choice on the basis of skin color. And on planet Earth, that used to be called bias or even racism. Using color as a metric? Well, that's what he decided to do. And as someone running for the nation's highest office, Biden is morally obligated to pick the best person to take his place in the event of a tragedy, regardless of race or gender or ethnicity, any of it. But he never even tried to do that. How cynical. Instead, he viewed the whole thing as a box-checking exercise for the woke crowd. He should have made his choice just on merit. But now he's stuck with Harris. The bottom line? She she ran for president not so long ago and had a golden opportunity to present herself to liberal voters in the Democrat Party. But they rejected her in the most comprehensive manner possible, making it absolutely clear that they didn't regard her as worthy of serving as president. Now, in a desperate effort to please the hard left, Biden has rejected the judgment of his own party's voters and placed Harris in line to have all the power that Democrats thought she shouldn't have.
That was a commentary by Laura Ingraham and exposed some of the radical views that Joe Biden's nominee for vice president, one of the senators from California, Kamala Harris, holds. Well, if you read the headlines and the commentary yesterday, you would get a completely distorted impression of what a Ontario Human Rights Commission study actually showed. Headline: Black people more likely to be arrested, charged by Toronto Police Services than other groups, report says. And, of course, the various cop haters proclaim this to be proof of what they said they'd already always knew, and that is, you guessed it, that the Toronto Police Service was systemically racist. Okay, I'd like to go over the information from this report. In a new report by the Ontario Human Rights Commission, report shows that black people are more likely than other racialized groups or white people to be arrested. Now, in case you're not up on the latest jargon, racialized groups mean other races other than whites. A disparate impact. That's the title. The second report released by the Ontario Human Rights Commission as part of a public inquiry launched in 2017 to address anti-black racism, discrimination, and profiling by the Toronto Police Service. Look at the bias. It was to investigate anti-black racism, discrimination, and profiling by the Toronto Police Service. It's in the terms of study that they've already formed a conclusion. There's anti-black racism. Well, maybe there isn't. I'm going to argue there isn't. And it found that while black people make up less than 10%, well, actually it's about 8% of the Toronto's population, they represent almost a third of all charges analyzed by the researchers. Okay. Now, that only would have any validity if you accept that all people are equal with equal results. Would you accept that? That's very dangerous, you know, if you do. All people are equal with equal results. And so if the results are not equal, why then it must be, you know, systemic racism. Let us take perhaps a more obvious example. On the basis of age, the people most likely to get in trouble with the law are people between the ages of 16 and 30. And males much more likely to get in trouble with the law than females. Does that mean there is anti-male bias on the part of the police? Well, why don't they arrest more young women? Well, can you think of any reason, maybe? Yeah, like maybe young women don't commit crimes as often as young men. So does that mean there's systemic, well, it wouldn't be racism, would it be sexism? No, it doesn't mean that at all. Well, here's another one. Just as
you're far more likely to be arrested if you're a male between the ages of 16 and 30 than a male between the ages of 70 and 85. Does that mean there is discrimination in favor of the older people? A form of ageism that disadvantages the young? No. It's simply that men in the ages bracket of 70 to 85 are, well, much less likely to commit crime. Many are not that mobile anymore, that active. That doesn't mean, of course, that some don't. Of course they do. You see what I mean? If you take a simplistic, numbers-only approach, you're going to be led to draw the wrong conclusions. Okay. While commission members acknowledge that the information will likely come as no surprise to the city's black community or their allies, they hope the highly highly disturbing findings will put pressure on decision makers at a time of global reckoning about policing. The time for debate about whether systemic racism or anti-black racial bias exists within the Toronto Police Service is over. Ontario Human Rights Interim Chief Commissioner Anna Chadha, she's sure not from County Tipperary, said in a statement on Monday, it's time for action that results in concrete changes in institutions and systems of law enforcement that are accountable for the racial disparities found in these reports. Let me suggest another possibility. The racial disparities found in these reports, that is, broadly speaking, blacks get into trouble a lot more often with the law than whites do, or other racialized minorities. That in trouble, that would be East Indians usually, and Orientals, but mostly Chinese. Perhaps the explanation is that blacks commit more crime. And what would you do to address that? The only way I can see that you're going to get the numbers to turn out right would be to say, well, look, we won't arrest any blacks after the first of September. That way, by the end of the year, there'll be roughly, blacks will have been arrested roughly in proportion to their share of the population. And because this is the funny thing, or interesting thing, Orientals and East Indians are arrested less frequently than blacks, but also less frequently than whites. Well, they better go out and arrest more Chinamen and East Indians. Now, then the numbers will be all that right. Right? No, this is madness. Researchers led by University of Toronto criminologist Scott Wortley analyzed Toronto police data from 2013 to 2017 for 9 offenses they believe would be likely to involve the exercise of police discretion, such as driving offenses, failure to comply within conditions, or disturbing the peace. And they found blacks. Now, failure to comply, this is not a simple, this is not a complicated thing. Failure to comply usually refers to bail or parole conditions. And the police have the option, in fact, should charge you with breach of undertaking. Now, police have some discretion. Failure to comply. Blacks, there were 2013 charges. Whites, there were 493. That could, of course, be because blacks tend to be more lawless, are already in trouble with the law disproportionately, and therefore have these various conditions. Bail conditions or parole conditions, and more frequently fail to reply to comply. Cannabis possession, 751 charges against blacks, 146 against whites. Maybe they use dope more, or more in public. Assaulting police, 510 charges against blacks, 139 against whites. And could it be that blacks are more violent? No. Obstructing justice. Okay, now. For this report, researchers also analyzed use of force data in lower level cases not serious enough to meet the threshold of being investigated by the SIU. That would mean where a civilian was injured. Black people were once again very overrepresented, present in 38.9% of the cases, despite the fact that they constitute 8.8% of the population of Toronto. Again, could that not be a result of their tending to be confrontational in dealings with police? Here's another, but I find very, very interesting. Overall charges rate per 100,000 people. Blacks, 15,122 charges per 100,000 blacks. Whites, 3,853. So roughly only 20% of the charges against blacks. But here's another interesting statistic. Other racial minorities, 2,115 per 100,000 people. So, in broad terms, blacks are 15,000 per 100,000 people charged. Whites are 3.8. Other racial minorities, too. I ask, an East Indian is obviously not white. Chinaman or Korean is obviously not white. How is it that the supposedly racist police are overcharging these poor blacks but undercharging the Chinese and the East Indians? Well, another possibility is blacks are committing more crimes. And when you look at the perpetrators and very often the victims of serious crime in Toronto, let's say usually murder, assault, armed robbery, rape, the perpetrators are overwhelmingly black, way out of proportion to the 8.8% of their population in metropolitan Toronto. That's not a matter of overcharging. That's not a matter of the police having it in for blacks. They don't even make these records if they haven't committed a serious crime. Committed. Not accused or somebody had it in for poor old T-Shawn. However, because of the built-in bias of the cultural Marxists who now dominate the media and dominate decision makers in Toronto, there will be more handcuffs placed on the police, in my opinion. The best thing that could happen would be this report will be ignored, but I don't think it will be. And there will be more effort to twist themselves into a pretzel so that the numbers turn out right. That is, more whites are arrested, or conversely, far fewer blacks are arrested. Which means blacks will increasingly get a pass. Will that lead to less crime? Of course not. Speaking of crime, and this is a heartbreaker, and the internet is alive with anger, righteous anger about this.
Red Deer Walk-In Clinic doctor remembered as a caring, full of life individual as first-degree murder charges are laid in his slaying on Monday. With tearful eyes and lowered heads, former patients, acquaintances, colleagues, and strangers laid flowers, balloons, and stuffed animals in an impromptu memorial Tuesday outside the clinic where a longtime Red Deer doctor was killed and the day a patient was charged with his murder. Margaret Quinton folded her hands, weeping as she bent down to look at a photo of her doctor of 15 years. Her husband put his arm around his wife and rubbed her back. Now, Red Deer is in the middle of Alberta, parked way up the main highway that runs between Calgary and Edmonton. "He made you feel special, like you're the only one," she said, crying. He did that, I know, not just for us, but for hundreds of people. And he was a very good man." So this is Dr. Walter Reynolds. Dr. Reynolds, 45, a husband and father of two, originally from South Africa, was fatally attacked inside an examination room at the Village Mall Walk-In Clinic on Monday. Dozens stopped to visit the memorial set up against a lamppost outside the clinic on Tuesday afternoon. More details that are perhaps not all that important. Clinic manager Debbie York said that Dr. Reynolds was full of life, caring, funny, and a good boss for more than a decade. The RCMP said on Tuesday that the victim and the suspect knew each other. "It wasn't a random attack," said Superintendent Gerald Grobmeyer, the Red Deer RCMP detachment commander. Deng Mabior, M-A-B-I-O-U-R, Deng Mabior, 54, is charged with first-degree murder as well as an assault, as assault of a peace officer and assault with a weapon, a machete, on another physician. Deng Will Luol Deng, who lives in South Sudan but knows Mabior from the South Sudanese community in Red Deer, said he's shocked. "I am very sorry and very sad about what happened. We still don't know why." Anyway, a fundraiser to try to raise money for the family of. Just after noon on Monday, Red Deer RCMP reported that one person inside the clinic at Village Mall had been attacked with a weapon and suffered life-threatening injuries. A man was in custody and no one else had been sought, was being sought in the case. The walk-in clinic was full of witnesses when the assault began inside one of the examination rooms. Anina Mullen, who had been a patient of Reynolds since 2006, was standing in line when she heard her doctor screaming for help to call 911. The receptionist asked if anyone could help before two male patients raced to the room, reporting that the doctor was being beaten over the head with a hammer, said Mullen. Everyone then ran outside with the two male patients holding the front door to the clinic shut to keep the assailant inside. Police then arrived and said Mullen, ordering the suspect to put down his weapon before a bloodied hammer was thrown out the door, nearly striking an officer. Police later said an officer dealing with the suspect had suffered minor injuries. She said a man wearing a hoodie over 6 feet tall and with a disposable face mask pulled down past his chin was covered in blood with a smirk on his face. Reynolds was also covered in blood when emergency responders brought him out on a stretcher. This is appalling. What we have is a few. Mabior made his first court appearance today by video camera in Red Deer, and the judge wasn't quite sure what to do with him because he asked him if he understood the charges, and his response was garbled, and that he said he couldn't remember, but he felt he was ill, but when he is
treated, he will be better. And now, whether this is an act, you know, I'm crazy, or whether it's real, I guess we will find out. The police, as usual, tell you nothing, or very little. They would not even confirm that Mambior was a patient of Dr. Reynolds, but other people have. And this just drives me insane. The absolutely insolent secrecy. Well, why won't they tell you? Right to privacy. Well, whose privacy? The doctor's dead, and it's somehow a matter of privacy that Mambior was a patient of his? Give me a break. Now, if the issue was some medical fact, like Mambior being operated on for cancer of the left toe or something, all right, maybe I could see the privacy argument. But it's just a way to tell you nothing. Anyway, in court today, Mambior was doing the "oh, I can't remember" thing, and I'm not feeling too well, I need assistance, etc. So he's charged with having attacked the doctor, butchered him with a machete, and hit him again repeatedly with a hammer, and apparently did some damage to one of the arresting police officers. He was 54, a big man, and he was he was from South Sudan. Now, I ask myself, on what overriding merits does somebody get in from South Sudan to Canada? Well, I'll tell you, he probably didn't. He probably came as a refugee. And I have to ask, who authorized this? No, I mean individual. Who went over the paperwork and said, this Mambior is okay. He'll be an outstanding benefit to the Dominion of Canada. I'd like to know. Now, refugees supposedly are checked for a criminal record background and general health. If Mambior is crazy, has mental challenges, was he checked for that? Don't know. Would like to know, though. And I'm laying the blame for this on the rotten, failed, anti-white immigration policy pursued not just by the present Prime Minister of the Trust Fund Kid, but by Prime Ministers going back to Pierre Trudeau. Conservatives and liberals alike, they all share a lot of blame for this. Let me tell you I won't say an argument I had earlier today, but a good colleague of mine has said we shouldn't be taking in refugees in general because often these are damaged people. And they don't get undamaged just by coming to Canada. And I said, well, you know, I agree with you about people from war zones like South Sudan and Somalia and Ethiopia. But what about all the good people that I know who came from Eastern Europe at the end of the Second World War or just before the fall of communism in the 60s, 70s, and 80s? Almost to a man or woman, these are educated, cultured, hardworking, contributing citizens. Salt of the earth. But they came as refugees. And my friend clarified, I've got to say that what she said made a lot of sense. She said, but they came from cultured countries. They had been through a trauma, yes, communism or the Second World War, as the case might be. But that was not their normal situation. They came from a Christian culture. They came from a good culture. Many of the so-called refugees we're getting, particularly from Africa, don't come from good cultures. They come from what President Trump perhaps
bluntly, but not incorrectly, called shithole states. They often come from places where the morality is not ours. It is savage. It is cruel. And add to that whatever traumas that they might or might not have suffered, we're dealing with really dicey individuals. Letting them into the country may not be a very bright idea. Now, of course, I can hear and anticipate the screams. It's rabid racist if you keep them out. No, it might be common sense to keep out people who do what this man did. And I say quite seriously, I lay the blame for the murder of this good man, Dr. Walter Reynolds, squarely at the feet of our rotten political class and the immigration policy that, liberal or conservative, they have pursued for 40 years. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. I'm going to play some music now from women who have made a great contribution to country and western music. This is from a CD called Country Queens. Hope you like it. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
Well, I was born to coal miner's daughter in a cabin on a hill in Butcher Holler. We were poor, but we had love. That's the one thing that Daddy made sure of. He shoveled coal to make a poor man's daughter. All day long in the field of hoeing corn. Mommy rocked the babies at night and read the Bible by the coal light. And everything would start all over come the break of morn. Daddy loved and raised their kids on a miner's pay. Mommy scrubbed our clothes every day. Why, I've seen her fingers bleed to complain there was no need. She'd smile in mommy's understanding way. In the summertime we didn't have shoes to wear, but in the wintertime we'd all get a brand new pair. Daddy always managed to get the money somewhere. Yeah, I'm proud to be a coal miner's daughter. I remember well the well where I drew water. The work we done was hard. At night we'd sleep, cause we were tired. I never thought Butcher Holler. Well, a lot of things have changed since way back then, and it's so good to be back home again. Not much left but the floor, nothing lives here anymore except the memories of a coal miner's daughter.
Somebody knew, I thought I never would forget you, for I thought then I never could. taken all the pains away. Until now, I'm bound to hurt once a day. Once a day.
Sometimes it's hard to
could be a woman. Giving all your love to just one man. You have bad times, and you have good times, doing things that you don't understand. But if you love him, you forgive him, even though he's hard to understand. And if you love him, I'll be proud of him, 'cause after all, he's just a man. Thank you. song uphill, and the colors in my rainbow turn blue. You kiss the tears away, you smile at me and say, funny face, funny face, I love you.
This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on altwhitetv.com or whiteresistanceradio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, and I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever.